Imagine what it sounded like in 1776. There were no radios, no telephone rings, no car horns, no whirling of your hard drive fan, no refrigerator hum. Richard Rath is the author of How Early America Sounded. He says the sound of early America, the church bell, the town crier, women beating their laundry, had a distinct difference from sound today. Rath says that every sound in early America had a living and willful source.
There were very few things of the sort that we would now call mechanical sounds. So no industry, no automobiles, no engines, no electricity. So most every sound was associated with some form of life.
Let's put this in context, if you will. What would you hear on a regular basis? I mean, we know we walk outside, we hear traffic. We hear planes flying overhead. We hear music blaring. What would you hear in the early American soundscape?
Well, it would very much depend on whether you were in a city or in a rural area. The rural areas would be a lot quieter for the most part. Most of the population at this time was rural. The cities are actually where I found more interesting sounds, though. And the idea that it's quieter in the past doesn't really, I don't think, hold as well for cities.
If you think about wagons rattling by and the conversation of people?
Iron wheels and horse hoofs with iron shoes over cobblestone roads makes a huge racket. And there were noise abatement rules and laws even in the 18th century in Philadelphia. They had complaints that they couldn't conduct church services because of all the noise of the traffic coming by. Actually, one of the interesting things is that bells were a lot louder then because of how they were rung.
How can the bells be louder? You say because of the way they were rung, not because of the sounds around them, but because of the use of the bells?
Yeah, the way that they're rung now, if they haven't been replaced by a tape recording of bells, which probably 90% of the churches now use tapes or some form of recording, when they still use an actual bell, they swing the clapper to hit the bell, and most of the sound goes right into the bell tower. The way they used to ring them was that the bell swung on hinges, and it didn't ring until it was pretty much at a 90-degree angle.
So the mouth of the bell was aimed out.
So the mouth of the bell was aimed out, and then the bell tower actually acted as an amplifier to direct the sound out, and then there'd be baffles that directed it down. So the bells were much louder. For example, ship captains used to be able to hear the bells in the middle of the Delaware River in Philadelphia, the bells of Christ Church. Actually, the bells are still there, and it's a few blocks in from the river, but they could hear it like a mile out into the river, no problem. And now you can't even hear them a couple of blocks away. I drove around on a Sunday morning, and it's much quieter now than it would have been in the 18th century.
But what you're saying is that the bells are still there. If we were to go back and ring the bells instead of pulling the clappers, you could still hear those bells in the middle of the river.
Yes, yes. And that's actually one of the points of the book, is that one of the arguments has always been, oh, you can't really do a history of sound because sound is ephemeral and disappears. But actually, if you think about it a little creatively, there's all sorts of sounds that are pretty much the same sounds as they were designed that are available today, and they serve just as well as a paper document for telling us things about the past.
Mm. It's fascinating. What happened? Why did the change take place? Why do we pull the clapper instead of ringing the bell?
Well, that's where it gets complex, because sound obviously didn't disappear. In many ways, the world's much louder now, but people attended to it less. But what happened with the bells is really interesting, because they began to be reported in newspapers, and reading about the bells served the same function as listening to the bells formerly did. But because print could reach across regions, people started, first they read about bells in London, but then they started reading about bells in the other colonies, oftentimes protesting what was going on in London, and it helped build an American identity before the Revolution, a sense of distinctive Americanness as opposed to being British from finding out what was going on in these other colonies, you know, that they rang the bells to protest the Stamp Act or something like that. You'd read in Boston that they had done the same thing in New York, and all of a sudden you've got more in common with people from New York than you do with British subjects in England.
Well, and because you'd read about the bells being rung, you don't need to hear them. It's almost as though you have heard them because you read about them.
Yes. And actually, the newspaper would say the same things that the bells meant. So when you heard the bells, you were supposed to know, say, it was the king's birthday or that this was for a protest. And that would be printed in the newspaper. So the actual message of the bells was reduced to print as well.
Did early Americans have an understanding, a science of acoustics?
The science of acoustics was very interesting because we think, oh, they just hadn't developed the science of acoustics. But there was a very well-developed science of acoustics where they believed that sound was a particle that actually had a tangible force in the world. So sound did things. Like, people thought that thunder was what killed people, not the lightning.
Did they even understand that there was a relationship between thunder and lightning?
Oh, of course they did, yes. And they talked about whether it was the thunder that killed you or the lightning, and they decided because people who lived had been struck by lightning and didn't hear the thunder, because I guess they were knocked out before the thunder clapped, that was part of the reason that they decided that the thunder was what killed people. But also because the thunder was the voice of God, so that it crossed, like it wasn't just science or just theology, it was both together.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because thunder and lightning obviously are the same, at least I believe they're the same now as they were in early America, but the way in which we perceive them has changed, and that's a huge difference.
Yes. And now this is actually a very decentering and difficult point to get across to people because they just think that, oh, they were just wrong. They didn't know how lightning actually works, that the lightning is what kills people. But actually, it's not the lightning that kills people. It's electricity, and thunder is the audible element of it, and lightning is the visual element. And I use this analogy of two deer standing by the side of the road, and they're arguing with each other over their fallen comrade out in the middle of the road, whether it was the headlights or the horn that had killed them. So it's no more the lightning than the thunder that does the damage. But now we just think, oh, to believe that thunder did it was superstitious and to believe lightning did it is scientific. But it's really a reflection of how much we've become a more visual culture.
Richard Rath is the author of the book How Early America Sounded. You're listening to his recording of the bells at Christ Church in Philadelphia. The bells date back to the 1700s.